Welcome to the KGP Sixteen Horizon podcast. My name is Kay, a story writer, film researcher, and avid horror aficionado. On alternate Wednesday nights at 10 o'clock London time, I will be rigorously focusing on every aspect of cinematic horror with interviews, analysis, and short stories. Join me in untying the soul's strings of darkness, exploring the human mind's abyss and their filmic psychological projections. Tonight, Michelle Satchwell is coming back on the show to talk about the role of women in horror films. Class, gender and race will also be analyzed as to how they have been portrayed over the decades and if and how nowadays things have changed. Michelle analyzes classic female-led horror films through sociopolitical theories and practices and sheds light on how psychology examines these filmic portrayals. Therefore, I decided to split the episode into two parts so I don't cut out anything, as everything Michelle mentions is captivating, revealing and eye-opening. Without further ado, here's the interview. Hi Michelle, welcome back once more on my show. I'd like to pick up the conversation from where we left it off last time, and by that I mean Gothica. Can you please summarize for us why is it so appealing to you?
Yes, of course. I really, really enjoyed Gothica, and one of the reasons is because it's different to most other horror films. But most horror films are portrayed kind of as, you know, silly female, over-sexualized female, a sexy female lead, all of those angles. He doesn't really have any kind of say in what's happening to her. Whereas in Gothica, Halle Berry's character, she's got that power, she's got that control, that she starts off as this kind of strong female. Then obviously, then later gets put in an insane asylum and classed as having mental illness. But all the while, she's trying to fight to get out. It's all about her journey, her struggle to kind of get back the power from arguably the men who, in a patriarchal sociological view, have all of the power, and especially in the field of psychiatry and mental health, where males tend to dominate that field. So that's why I loved Gothica so much, because it had a completely different angle to it. It had a powerful, inspirational woman, rather than a lot of the kind of females I see in horror films I don't aspire to, I don't particularly like in that sense. And, you know, it even to me links a little bit to Halloween outfits when I'm dressing up for Halloween. And a lot of the female outfits that you can buy are very over-sexualized, you know, a sexy devil or a sexy whatever. It's never, you know, the men get all the best outfits and all the best roles. It annoys me. Whereas Gothica definitely didn't kind of come from that angle.
Do you think that the violence inflicted upon women is a sociopolitical statement? More often than not, we have watched the typical scenario of a woman getting stalked, captured, tortured, but eventually found the courage to turn the situation around and survived. How did such scenarios, with some permutations of course, become popular? How were they perceived in the 70s, for example, and how are they perceived now?
Well, it's a difficult one to answer as a sociopolitical statement. It's hard because, you know, it does happen to men. There is violence against men in films, in horror films, in all sorts of genre of films. That is something that we see. It's not kind of an obvious as maybe like the difference we see with age, where younger people, we see them getting inflicted in a lot of pain in horror films, whereas females, yes, stereotypically, we tend to see them be more inflicted with pain, but it can happen to men too in horror films. So things like, having said that, actually, I'm just going to counter my own point. Having said that, it is, from a feminist point of view, being a female as well, being a female sociologist, you can't kind of not acknowledge the way in which a lot of the films, like you say, the getting stalked, the captured, the tortured, that narrative does feel like the stereotypical norm, that is, you know, the woman is there to be sexualized. It's part of the male gaze. Even a lot of the film front covers show the woman in that kind of sexy portrayal, like I spit on your grave, you see her from behind and you see kind of her bottom showing and things like that. It's the woman has just become kind of an object for the man, and that is all she is, almost like she's some sort of sex toy or something for the man. So it's difficult to argue, but I would say usually, kind of in most films, and not just in horror films, but in all films generally, women are portrayed in that sexual way. And maybe that's because of the patriarchy, the fact that men dominate society. It could be to do with what's classed as standardly kind of conventional attractiveness, that all women used in films are there to be seen and to be kind of fantasized and desired. But it is kind of the issue that we have, like films like Alien, where it focuses on a woman, Sigourney Weaver, obviously kind of having to deal with a lot of violence and deal with all the aliens attacking her, or Halloween, which I'm sure we'll talk about a few times, where, you know, the woman nearly gets killed by a man and she's trying to escape. It's kind of that constant narrative, I suppose, like in the Saw films as well, and I Spit on Your Grave, you know, these women are there to be sexual. Like in one of the opening parts of the Saw film, you have a woman in stockings and they're like pulling off her hair and a scalp and stuff like that. It's a sexualized image that we see. And I Spit on Your Grave, she's sexually assaulted in the beginning. It feels like, I'm not blaming horror films as such. Maybe I'm kind of taking it a little bit wider to films generally, or even wider still to society as a whole, that there is this over-sexualization of females, that for a film to sell and for it to be popular, it needs to have kind of these attractive women. And the attractiveness is socially constructed. We kind of decide what is seen as attractive. But most of that tends to be those symbols of fertility, things like a young female, curves and hips, you know, hourglass shape, having long hair, all of those kind of fertile images. And in sociology, when we teach this in class, we talk about even the fact that women shave their legs and shave their armpits, and those is why some feminists are against those ideas, is kind of that over sexualization bringing you back to your youth when you would have arguably been at your most fertile. So perhaps it is a part of wider society as a problem. How is it perceived now? I like to think it's improved. Liberal feminists would definitely argue it's improved. So liberals tend to focus on how legislation is being put into place to help promote women as equal rights and things like this. And obviously, in the 1970s, when some of the main films like Halloween were out, it would have been seen as women were weak. That was maybe the narrative back then, because the woman's role in the house was quite weak. Her role was to be subservient, to put her husband first, or arguably her children first, but always to put someone above her. That was kind of the dominant ideology at that time. Whereas now, it does seem to be improving. I think probably more so now, the main ideology is having that strong, independent woman. And you can thank films, you can thank music, you can think all different parts of the media to kind of, you know, that they've brought that kind of new narrative out. And you do get some films where women aren't portrayed as weak, where their whole being in the film isn't there to be kind of objected to. So films like Annihilation, although it's not its main focus, it's not kind of a gender horror film or anything like that, but it does have five females in it, or is it four females? I can't remember. It's got a group of girls in it, and they are kind of portrayed as being smart and being confident. That's who they are. It's not that these are weak girls waiting for a man to kind of abuse them or attack them or stalk them or capture them. You know, they're not seen as kind of weak and as prey, possibly. So I think it is improving. And maybe we're starting to challenge that myth of men being seen as strong, because that's kind of the idea of, you know, those constructions of what is masculinity, what is femininity. A lot of the historical narratives would have been that females are weak, men are strong. And they would always kind of play an argument that it's because of some biological predisposition. And that's where psychology comes in. So I kind of feel like I'm arguing against some of the theories I teach in psychology, which is, you know, contradictory. But those are now starting to shift. And we've seen the problems with toxic masculinity and how it affects men and their mental health. And, you know, we've got it's okay to not be okay in movements where men are having, you know, more more opportunities to be less traditional in their roles. And I think maybe films today, they're trying to avoid just having the idea that it's the woman being there that makes it scary, like seeing how the woman responds in those situations. Maybe they're trying to remove that, and now they've got to be scary in their own right rather than scary through abusing women. Having said that, little call back to the 70s, even those films still had women that would overcome the situation. So Sigourney Weaver ends up killing the alien in the end, spoilers. You know, you've got in Halloween, she ends up stabbing Michael Myers. I was going to say Michael McIntyre, not the same at all. So they do kind of overcome in that sense. So, but obviously just the way that they were portrayed in that period was very over-sexualized, very kind of an object that was dominated by the man and belonged to the man as well.
I can see where you're coming from. Since you mentioned I Spit on Your Grave, this was one of the very few films back then. I can only imagine how it was perceived, but until then, we have had Revenge, The Villainous, Kill Bill, Lady Vengeance, Peppermint, The Brave One, and numerous more that are about women taking revenge for what has happened to them. Even though there were films in the past, such as I Spit on Your Grave, it seems that nowadays there is a trend. Is the film industry pushed by society to produce more of those films? The other way around? Are there sides we need to choose in society and then make films to promote them?
Perhaps, yeah. It's one of the main arguments we have in sociology of kind of what comes first. Is it the big institutions in society, like media being one, education another, religion, family? Is it these institutions that are telling us what we want? So the media starts to make more horror films that show that women can get kind of that revenge and overturn the power. Or we also argue the opposite, where maybe it's the people have demanded it. So the people in society are saying, actually, we're getting sick of the same stories in the same ways shown in the media. We want our story being represented. And they're kind of the two main schools of thought in sociology. So you have your structuralist sociologists who believe it's the institutions with the power that control the individuals. And then you have, it's called social action theory, but some people call it interactionism. And that's the idea that actually it's the individuals get together and then they change the institutions to fit what they want. So it's a huge debate. And so it's where all of the kind of different theorists align somewhere on that scale. And yeah, possibly that maybe they want to see women kind of take back that power, take back that revenge, because obviously throughout time there has been, you know, obviously domestic abuse can happen in both situations, but there are more statistics that domestic abuse happens to females, more sexual assault on females as well. And we know through things we've seen just in the news where females aren't taken seriously. So a few years ago, there was the news story that leaked that the woman was to blame for being raped because she was wearing lace underwear. And it was in the news and it was like, that makes no sense, you know, that women aren't there to be objectified by men. Obviously, men that go on to do that aren't probably, you know, representative of most men anyway. And it could be that there's an individual issue going on with that one person. But it's good to kind of change the story and to show women getting that power. I'm not condoning revenge. Always go through the legal means. I'm not condoning that revenge. But I do think possibly maybe that's why we needed to start to see that change, especially when we think back to, you know, when we've seen big Hollywood films and some of the people involved in that process who have abused women, and it's since come out about what's happened in the 70s, 80s and 90s, we need to kind of shift that up into the horror film industry where we do have a lot of female characters and kind of give them back that voice and that power and that opportunity to seek revenge.
Hold that thought about revenge. I'll come back to that. Can you please explain if and how abjection has influenced these scenarios, but also the female character establishment and development?
I had to do a bit of research on abjection, because although in psychology we look at a lot of unconscious theories, we look at Freud and we look at Lacan and people like this, we not actually cover that objection as such. So I did a bit of research into it. I found it's the human reaction to the threat of a breakdown in meaning or a loss of distortion between subject and object. So then I thought, well, you know, what does this mean for us? What does that actually mean? And it was looking at the idea of kind of those boundaries between, and a lot of that probably stems from maybe unconscious conflicts. So taking it back to Freud, and then I'll bring it back to abjection. Freud, his whole theory was based on unconscious childhood conflicts and psychology. That was what he was famous for, is how he's become the father of psychology. And not everyone agreed with him. A lot of people then kind of distanced themselves from him because he went over-sexualized with a lot of his theories. But a lot of the focus was on kind of how we develop through that childhood, how important childhood is. And when you think about horror films, a lot of them kind of suggest that the monsters begin within the family. So, and maybe they then go on to kind of have that future horror in your later life because of the experiences you've had growing up in your family, thinking back to like The Shining and things like that. You have those examples of people in your family that are actually probably more terrifying than the rest of the world out there. So Freud kind of, I don't know if he was a horror film fan, it would have been cool if he was, but he was definitely focused on that idea of that there is the conflict, especially, he focused more so on boys. And he said, especially between the mum and the young boy, because the boy wants to possess his mother. He wants to own all of his mother's love, very similar to what we see in horror films as well. And that when he's in that Oedipus stage, the Oedipus complex, he literally wants to have his mum all to himself. And Freud used to use like phrases like sexually desire, which puts off a lot of my students and things. And it's not that he wanted to have sex with the mum, but he did want to own all of his mother's love without kind of the dad getting in the way or other siblings getting in the way. And maybe that's part of the problem with abjection, is that there's kind of this conflict, there's kind of this unity between the mum and the child that is a bond that kind of has to get broken at some point when the mum eventually releases the son or the son eventually grows up and develops. And definitely an area for conflict, and we see that in some films as well. And the mum gets blamed for a lot in psychology. We have, now I'm teaching schizophrenia at the moment, and we're blaming the mum. One of the quite old theories is the schizophrenic mother, that the way that the mum is with the child, if she's quite cold and over domineering and over protective, then that leads to that child developing mental health issues. So the blame quite often gets put onto the mum. Maybe that's why we see these female characters in horror films, especially kind of that mother role so much, because of that conflict between mother and child and creating those boundaries. And maybe that's why we see kind of an over-focus on the grotesque and the kind of, I'm going to end up bringing in martyrs here, the grotesque and kind of shocking images that we see in films, because people are kind of half attracted to them. I don't know, maybe they're not half attracted to them, but they have a kind of fascination between us as, where does our body start and end, and kind of the physicality of our body, how it's so animalistic, it's so primitive that we all still have to use those functions. And pregnancy is a really good example of that, that your body is still kind of intertwined with kind of you being a mum. Your body is having to kind of share its body, you're having to keep that unity. And there's also kind of that, having that respect for knowing when it's become kind of an abnormal motherhood and a normal motherhood. So maybe that's why we see kind of this overemphasis of females. It could be why, like films like Alien, for instance, has kind of that focus on her trying to get rid of her child, the alien, trying to push the alien out of her body, that scene, but also refusing to surrender the child, that kind of conflict between trying to get rid of, but also remain and keep too. So that's kind of how I've interpreted abjection. I may have took it in a different way to how other people might have, but I focus more on kind of Freudian and the unconscious aspects of it.
Alien is an interesting example in so many ways. In this instance, though, In Alien 3, Ellen Ripley is carrying one of the aliens inside her, and in Alien Resurrection, the alien perceives her as its mother. And even though Ripley hates it, she betrays it but feels sorry for it at the same time. And since we're at it, motherhood and menstruation are recurring themes in horror films. Is there something that consciously or unconsciously people find appealing or even appalling?
Yeah, I think so, kind of that attraction, because arguably it's something most women are going to go through, motherhood. So in that sense, it makes it kind of appealing to understand such a arguably obviously natural phenomenon, but also very weird and peculiar, not very frequent phenomenon as well. And then menstruation could be part of it, because that's where maybe the mother has to accept that the child is no longer a child and that the child is now going through puberty. It's kind of breaking that bond, and then the child begins to grow up. So for instance, like in films like Carrie, when she gets her period and she's in the shower at school and stuff like that, quite a graphic scene for her. And that moment, obviously, she grew up with a single mother. And then that means their bond would have been even arguably closer, and it kind of creates that issue that that bond is going to break. She is going to grow up. She is going to go on to change. So it could be kind of that aspect of it. There's lots of psychological and sociological theories why menstruation may be portrayed as kind of this horrific, horror, grotesque, you know, difficult thing. And it could be possibly, and a lot of this, I can make the divisions between psychology and sociology because they do disagree a lot. Psychology will always focus more on the nature aspects, and it will focus on that predisposition that maybe men don't like periods because they're of no value to men, that they can't get the woman pregnant because they're having the period. It means they've been unsuccessful getting the woman pregnant, and kind of their main biological drive in life is that reproductive success. So for a man, the menstruation is something to kind of fear. And maybe that's why we see it in horror films. If males are usually the target audience for horror films, maybe that's why there's this overemphasis on menstruation and, you know, how awful and evil it is, you know, in that sense. But from a sociological point of view, it could just be that the men are portraying it in that way because maybe they don't understand. They don't understand what's going on for a woman during a time of the month, during her period. It's, you know, male producers, male directors, maybe it's their own insecurities that are influencing the way they portray it. And obviously they are the patriarchy. They are the ones who have the power. They can make the rules. They determine how it's seen in the horror film. So they're going to show it as this horrible thing that happens. Maybe it's a part of the misogyny of just hating women generally, which I don't personally believe, but it is kind of one of the radical feminist point of view that maybe it's for just pure hatred of women. And then maybe with motherhood, kind of a similar angle, that motherhood is that process of change where, you know, physically, psychologically, culturally, the mother, you know, through pregnancy will go through all of those changes, which again can be an insecure, not understanding kind of time for a man. And maybe that's why it gets portrayed as something to fear, and hence horror films usually portray the things that people are afraid of. So maybe that's why it gets shown there. It also could be to kind of, I don't know, maybe reinforce the status quo, kind of to show, a lot of the horror films kind of show like an ideal mum, like the best mum in the world, that kind of American dream of she puts her husband and her children first, and usually she would be the type of mum that will survive in the horror films. But then the bad mums, the ones that abuse or neglect or, you know, are overly harsh to the children, they're the ones who get punished in the films. And again, a lot of it kind of plays into a lot of class roles and ethnicity roles as well, kind of this idealized white middle class mum who's the perfect mum. But then can you blame horror films for kind of portraying it in such stereotypical ways when most of films do, arguably? So kind of thinking back to 1960s, 70s, 80s, normally for a female in general film, not just horror film, their role was either to occupy the mother role or to occupy a sex object role. So hence in horror film, they're probably just going to combine those two together and get more for their money. And then there are some sociologists that discuss this in kind of more depth. And they talk about like Tuchman in 1978, he talks about it's a symbolic annihilation, that there just aren't many roles available for women in film. There's the narrow range of roles. And that's why it's inevitable that a woman would get cast in a motherhood role, and why the horror films would portray that, because what other roles are there for her to kind of fulfill? And maybe that stems from a long-seated problem that women are just something to be feared generally. Maybe it's not just menstruation and motherhood. And if you trace that back, you can go right back to big institutions like religion and in Christianity, where women have always been portrayed in the bad roles in religion, where Eve was the temptress. She was the undoing of all of humankind. A little bit of responsibility there, or Mary Magdalene being a prostitute and hanging out with Jesus. You know, there's always been these kind of bad females in religion. They're always portrayed in those negative ways. So if they're the narratives in religion and people are growing up with those surrounding them, perhaps that's why they then become the narratives in the film industry, and then obviously in the horror film industry as well. And arguably, it's so shocking, it's so scary when a mother does something bad in a horror film, because we class that as doubly deviant, because she's breaking the norms of what it means to be a mum, but she's also kind of breaking the law and being a criminal. And that just isn't allowed. It's like it's okay for a man to do those things, like in I'm trying to remember the name of the film, Eve Bayo, I think it was, with Samuel L. Jackson, that film.
Yeah, the 1977 one.
Yeah. It was okay for him to kind of be the bad man and cheat, that's fine, but for a woman to do that, no. So we call it, some people, you know, colloquially would just say double standards, but the sociological key term is double deviance. It's not okay for a woman to break those norms as well as breaking the law. That's just too shocking. And we look at that in terms of kind of crime in sociology, and why it's very rare. Most of our prisons are made up of men. 90% of prisons in the UK are made up of men. So that's why it's even more shocking when a woman in reality or in horror films does something that breaks that code. So there are a few of the ideas around it.
Speaking of, Wes Craven in Scream sets some rules that define the genre. One of them equates the woman having sex for the first time with death. What's your interpretation? Is it relevant to what you just talked about?
Absolutely. It's again that kind of deviancy that is seen as the woman shouldn't be sexually, she's not kind of allowed to be sexually explorative, she can't have multiple partners. That's not okay. And I think that's why there is kind of this fascination in horror films. Definitely in Scream, it's a perfect example of kind of that woman needs to be controlled. And in sociology, we call this informal agents of control, that we all control each other. So normally we talk about kind of the institutions controlling us, horror films telling us it's not okay. You know, you should be a virgin. That's the norm. That's what's okay. But also your friends and family will control you. And one of my favourites of sociology is interactionism. And that's where we kind of look at discourse between people and how they literally interact, how they hold these conversations. And it's what I did my dissertation in, was into discourse analysis between males and females. And I was looking at relationships, third year of uni, it was, you know, a fitting topic at the time. I was looking at relationships, and I had these focus groups of men and women in one group together talking about, you know, their relations. And there was words that were used to shame women, like slag, slut. There's these words that are only used against women, whereas for men, it's kind of almost celebrated, like another notch on the bedpost. It's something to be congratulated for. And that language, so I was at uni, 2007 was my third year of uni, you know, that was still something that was going around then, that was still kind of the dominant language, that it's not okay for a woman, but it is okay for a man. That's all of those controls that kind of produce the norms that regulate people's behavior, that make sure they behave that way. And then when you think, well, where did these stem from? When did that become? And obviously, I'm only ever talking about UK as well. Obviously, cross culturally, it's even completely different. But where did those kind of norms come from? And a lot of it comes from a lot of the psychology that I've studied and I'm really passionate about. But a lot of the biological psychology kind of has the norm that men have to spread their seed, that that's the best thing for them to do. Because in evolutionary theory, the whole purpose is for you to survive natural selection, but also for you to have reproductive success. So for you to go on and have offspring. And according to evolutionary psychologists, they say it's better for the guy to spread his seed, to try to impregnate as many women as possible, because he's always at risk of cuckoldry, that that woman could have got pregnant by another man and then his sperm won't become successful. So whereas women, they obviously have limited opportunity for reproductive success because they have a limited amount of eggs compared to kind of, we use a quote in psychology, teaspoonful of sperm is enough to impregnate multiple women, whereas obviously a woman has that one egg per month. So she has to kind of make sure she gets reproductive success by finding the best man for her, and that normally focuses on resources. The best man for her will be someone who can look after her offspring and keep her offspring alive, and that gives her reproductive success. Whereas for the man, he's got to try and get out there as much as possible so he can get reproductive success. So he's going to look for women that are attractive, who are showing signs of fertility, that have widened hips. And these are signs of fertility. And we've talked about having kind of long hair is a sign of youth and fertility. And he's going to look for the females that are most fertile. Now, that's a theory that we actually teach in psychology. But again, who comes up with these theories? And it is part of the patriarchy. It is men who are creating these theories. And it even gets used sometimes as excuses by men that they have to be more sexually adventurous because, well, it's just in my nature. It's in my instincts. I have to do it. You know, they blame evolution and that it's an evolutionary hangover that they still do it today. But I'd like to think we're a bit more evolved than that. But hence, that then becomes part of what people, you know, it becomes part of everyday's language and people's ideology. And then that's used to then control people rather than kind of accepting that maybe we don't need to focus so much on this heteronormative discussion. You know, a lot of the horror films focus on heterosexuality. You know, very few look at the homosexuality aspect. And that kind of focus is kind of demoralizing to females because they then are seen as kind of their virginity is their kind of most precious thing. It's what makes them them. It's what makes them ladylike. And I think that's why a lot of horror films focus on that. Again, probably trying to target the male audience and trying to have maybe that element of sex appeal as well as obviously fulfilling the horror brief too.
It seems that we are very contradictory beings. When a man wants to have sex with a woman, it's natural. If we do it, it's great. But if it's someone else, the woman they have had sex with is a slug or slut or whatever else.
Yeah, it's actually called slut shaming in sociology. It's the phrase we use in the textbook. Slut shaming. Yeah, I know. Always fun teaching GCSE students that one. But yeah, it's wrong. But that's a really good argument because it's always we shame the girl, but who is the guy having sex with? You know, why are we shaming the girl? The guy and the girl are, if you want to say bad, they're equally as bad as each other. But, you know, it always focuses on the girl being the problem in that sense.
And it gets better. We want to have sex with as many women as possible. But when it comes to our sister or daughter, for example, we are too protective. So people don't call them slugs, sluts, or again, whatever else.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a humongous contradiction. It's ridiculous, but it's part of, you see it, like I see it with my friends, people I speak to, kind of these young girls are policed from, you know, early doors. You can't dress a certain way because you'll attract a man, you know, a man, whereas men are encouraged to, you know, go do whatever they want. And it's those, again, those double standards, I suppose. that are just embedded in society. I like to think it's improving. I don't know. At the moment, a lot of my friends have quite young children, so they're not at that kind of teenage turbulent time yet. But it'll be interesting to see kind of has it changed from when I was growing up and kind of what my friends were going through at that time.
What do you think then? Are a woman's or a man's tribulations more appealing to horror fans? Who do we empathize with the most? Does it depend on our gender?
Well, it should do. It's supposed to, according to psychology, we normally kind of have same-sex identification. So Bandura, he looked mainly at aggression and violence. But in a lot of his studies with a Bobo doll, that I think I've mentioned before as well, focused on the idea that it was in the 60s and in America, but they'd watch an adult beat up this Bobo doll, and then the child would be then left alone in a room with this inflatable clown, and they would look at what they would do. And normally the child would only imitate the same sex. So if it was a boy, he would imitate the man. But if he saw the female beat up the Bobo doll, he wouldn't imitate it because it wasn't appropriate. So then that got me thinking, well, that can't be the case for horror films, because horror films predominantly is a male audience. So why are they showing kind of, you know, so much horrific scenes towards women? You know, them trying to escape from being tortured, or them being stalked, or them being captured or abused, and all of these things. I was like, it can't just be this same-sex identification that we normally expect to see in kind of Bandura and in conformity theories generally. So I did a little bit more research into this, and there's a sociologist, I believe, Carol Clover, she was looking into this, and she talked about the idea of why the final girl trope is popular. And she was arguing that maybe because obviously the normal discourse is she's going through horrific times, she's part of the chase scene, she eventually wins, usually by stabbing, and then we get kind of that hooray moment of like, woo, she overcome, we've got the happy ending. But maybe that's useful for the audience, because then for the maybe the women watching, they get to feel victorious. They get to have that moment of the woman's finally won, so they can identify with that. And maybe why it's beneficial for the man who's watching the horror film is that it's easier for him to empathize with seeing the woman go through the horrific scenes that she's going through than if it was a male character. Maybe it's more believable, because bearing in mind what we're saying before about kind of masculinity, that there's still this issue in society that masculinity is seen as you've got to be strong and tough and kind of those traditional, you know, masculine myths that we have, that maybe it wouldn't be believable if we saw a man running around screaming and shouting and crying and things like that. Maybe that we wouldn't find that believable enough to be able to empathize with it. Whereas if obviously it's a female doing it, then both genders are able to kind of feel that that's believable. And that actually does link back to Bandura's Bobo doll study, because although he did find the identical same-sex identification, he did argue that it had to be believable, that the reason why the boys wouldn't imitate the female aggressive role model was because they said it didn't feel realistic. It didn't feel like how you would expect a woman to behave in the 1960s. So maybe taking that same angle, it wouldn't feel realistic to see a woman, to see a man in the 1970s running around in some skimpy boxer shorts and a shirt, screaming that he's being stalked. Or being chased by a female, it just wouldn't be realistic enough for us to be able to empathize with it. So we kind of need a terrified female. We need that persona, because then the man gets to fulfill his desire of kind of being that white knight, that savior complex of he's going to come in and save her. So we need that moment for the men. But we also need that moment for the female audience, because then they get to have that, yes, we finally overcome the men bit. They get to kind of have that underdog story where they overcome that abuse and they feel like, yeah, I was the one who stabbed him too. I've won as well. So maybe it benefits both genders in the audience to have it to be an actual female that has to go through that horrific sequence in the horror films.
How does class or race affect this suffering? Does it add to it? Is it irrelevant?
I think so, yeah. In sociology, we always look at kind of class, race, gender. They are kind of our three biggest ones we go to in sociology. In terms of race, quite often when black people are portrayed in horror films, they tend to be either there as a token character, they tend to die first or early on. And that could be because maybe they're not kind of a famous actor. Maybe they don't get paid that well. Maybe they're not in the top billing. Like, you'll never have like the main top billing actor or actress dying in the first scene. That's really rare for that to happen. So perhaps that's why they end up dying first. Or they tend to be represented in kind of a comedy role or to do with some sort of criminal angle. There does tend to be an overrepresentation of black people in films generally, maybe not horror films so much, but in films generally. But a lot of their roles tend to be kind of exaggerated or stereotyped, that sometimes their actual storyline is linked to their race, that they can't just happen to be black and happen to be in a horror film. The film then has to be about them being kind of a black person and how they've had to go through such trials and tribulations that then the film becomes centered around their ethnicity. A more transgressive way of looking at race would be that it's part and parcel of the film, that it's not their only key identifier. Kind of like with females, how we're saying their key way that they're ever being seen is either as a mother or a sexual object. And that's a bit frustrating. She's never just a person. We always see it through the lens of being a female. And I think that's the same with race. We always see them with that focus on their race first rather than just their acting capability. So I think there's a lot of systemic issues there, where not just in the film industry, elsewhere as well, where they're not getting paid enough, they're not getting recognised enough to be able to have those key roles. And then maybe they wouldn't be the first person who dies in a horror film. You do have class in there as well. Definitely most of the horror films that I think of, like if I think of Scream, for instance, I remember when I first watched Scream, I was like watching it going, their house is incredible. Like, how big is their house? You know, I live in a council house. What is this? And it's kind of that boundary of it, or, you know, most of media, not just films, not just horror films, focus on middle class, that then gets represented. It's by far overrepresented in horror films, that is the norm. And maybe it's to try to be aspirational. Maybe it's to try to encourage people, if you create a Marxist, by the way, would be very anti the middle class, would say it's all seen as kind of part of the myth of meritocracy, that all these characters have worked hard, even in horror films, you know, that shouldn't be kind of maybe their role. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it is their role to play, but that the characters have worked hard, they've got to where they are, they have this meritocracy, they've got good jobs, good houses, because they've put that work in. And then Marxists would see that this is just another time that this false class consciousness is being spread, this false message is being spread, that then people blame themselves when they don't have those things, and they think, oh, well, I didn't work hard enough, it's my fault. They forget that actually there's, you know, kind of like a stepping ladder for those at the top, like those who are upper class, or in Marxism we call them the bourgeoisie, the ruling class. They have that stepping ladder to begin at an unfair starting point. They have that privilege. And the privilege is definitely what we see with a lot of the females in the horror films. They are white, they are middle class, they live in these big fancy houses, and oh, their life is so horrible, they're being tortured. You know, what's happening to them is horrific. But their actual, if you take it, scale it back to just their setting, it isn't that bad. You know, they've got a nice environment. But again, it's just another part of the media focusing on the middle class. And that's probably because who's making the horror films, they tend to also be white, they tend to also be middle class, and they tend to be men. And until we break those systemic boundaries, we're going to keep seeing that in horror films. Although, you know, it is improving. There are films that are trying to kind of tackle that. So There's films like, I'm trying to think of some, Us. You've got kind of a black family at the heart of it. You've got Under the Skin, where Johansson, Scarlett Johansson's trying to, she is definitely seducing men and she's definitely a sex object, but she's trying to get rid of, I suppose, some of those gender norms. And I suppose they're trying to kind of remove, I don't know about class though, I'm trying to think of one from a working class background. Leave that one with me.
Ma and Get Out are also amazing additions to the mix and contribute to the wind of change.
Yeah, definitely. There are more films starting to Get Out, definitely going down that route. So it's one of those processes that takes time, but it's what makes, you know, horror films so interesting, that they are a depiction of that time period. So although maybe when the producers are making the horror film, they're not contemplating those bigger issues, but ultimately for a sociologist, they're fascinating to go back and look at to see how we've changed and how progressive we've become.
Horror elicits fear through fiction and terror through facts. It is gory and it is psychological. It is caused by supernatural entities as much as it is caused by our deranged next-door neighbor. Horror can haunt our nightmares no less than it can haunt our questionable reality. So remember, the son of Erebus and Nyx always awaits to cross the rivers Styx and Acheron.